Okay. No questions then. We're ready to move forward.
Okay.
So back to the reading on training the mental ego. Training the mental ego. Training the mental ego. The training of this ego requires more care than the training of the other ego being the physical ego. For it is more difficult and a subtler, a more subtle matter to be aware of the desires of the mind and to weigh them down than to be aware of and to weigh down the desires of the body. No doubt, vanity is natural to the ego, and the ego is natural to every human being. But there are desires of the mind that are necessary, and there are desires of the mind that are not necessary. There are desires of the mind that are necessary. There are desires of the mind that are not necessary. Something very subtle there to think about. I mean, Murshid says these phrases and we read them or hear them and then we just move on. But he says, but there are desires of the mind that are necessary and there are desires of the mind that are not necessary. Anyone think of examples?
Well, it seems like knowledge is a good desire of the mind.
Okay.
But probably not the knowledge of making bombs.
Yeah.
Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, thy mind, thy soul. If our mind isn't on God, then what are we?
Yeah. Yes. Necessary. He says necessary. Interesting, isn't it? That there's some things that are necessary. That's different than desirable or possibly beneficial or it's necessary. The desires of the mind that are necessary.
Well, is he referencing, a path there?
Perhaps.
That there are thoughts in the mind, desires of the mind to aspire.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. And I highlight just that one phrase because here's the truth of the message. Murshid never really, if you go through, I don't recall, maybe someone else can find that and correct me, but he doesn't say, you must do this, you must not do that. There isn't that kind of dogma in the message. He suggests things. And now you read it and you understand it in this way. Oh, I kind of know that, I think that's what that means. And in another year you read it and you know something else from it. This is a very profound way that someone teaches that leaves that so open that one gains one's own realization without saying, you must do this, you must not do that. You understand? Really very profound, and it comes about in self-realization. And this is why early on he talks about how important it is for us on the path to kind of build the God ideal and how that is constantly moving too. As the horizon moves, as we approach it, it just moves again and we get a greater understanding. Greater understanding, greater understanding. There are desires of the mind that are necessary. There are desires of the mind that are not necessary. We understand it differently at different times. You know, the desire to make sure that our homes, our mind says, oh my goodness, I have to clean the house. I have to take a bath. I have to make sure I'm having good food. I mean, this is the mind in servitude to the physical body. Okay? Then the mind can go the other way. Really, it's so good for me to train my mind to aspire to study the great teachings. You know, it's kind of going more towards the soul. You see how that mind is in that in-between land? Mind is very important. And just because we don't say something, even the act of thinking it can have its own consequences, for it sets up a vibration that gives a consequence. I remember reading something by the mother who was the spiritual companion to Sri Aurobindo. And she was also a very practical person. She was born in France and had studied the spiritual path and then kind of left her life and went and lived at the ashram as the spiritual mother. And she said, notice if you can retrace the moment, like if there's a mishap, can you see what your thought was just before it happened? If one trips, one has an automobile accident, one cuts oneself, one anything. What was the thought just before that mishap? She always reminded people to be aware of that. And if you retrace it, usually it's something that created a disharmonious vibration that set up a pattern that created an outward circumstance. Really interesting.
We must never, ever do anything we don't love to do.
But we do.
Sold on going to that movie.
Oh, well, there you go.
And so he was griping and complaining. Well, I could care less. And thank God we didn't go because it was, I saw a few minutes of it. It was Ancestors or something rather. It was hot. Mm-hmm. The 3 minutes I saw of it. So thank heavens we didn't, you know. So
Al has his own wisdom and insight, doesn't he?
No, he doesn't. He thinks he's in a box.
Yeah, but he has it. He made whether he realizes it, but it sounds like he has it. That's why he has you.
So nasty.
Right. That's why he has you. Yeah. You can reflect it to him.
I can't understand it.
Yeah. Well, it gets back to that first part of the teaching today about perhaps not having the feeling that one has the confidence or the capacity to change things or the light within one's being. Yeah, yeah. So we all can be mindful of that.
Wow, is it really light?
Yeah. Well, speaking of light, I'm going to check my time here because I want to keep to my schedule. But I think it's good. I know we did this. We've been doing this practice, and you tell me, would you like to do the practice again, the Kasab practice? That focuses the light inward, the alternate nostril breathing. I think people found that beneficial. And I think it's good to kind of stick with one practice as we go through a certain body of teachings because it helps to deepen that practice. Okay. I've been reading this paper, they're from unpublished papers, of Murshid on the attainment of the inner being by Kasab. When we trace that source that holds man's life, it is nothing but light. And then we realize that the nature of light is to extend its rays and spread them around. So it is with the light of the soul. The soul spreads its light, which is breath. The soul spreads its light, which is breath. And it extends to the right and the left. By this, all things external become lighted, that both eyes and mind may see. But when the light, instead of extending, is concentrated, so to speak, instead of spreading, is thrown inward, then it lights up the inner planes, and all that is there becomes clear. This is done by Kasab, for in Kasab one masters both the power of light in extending and throwing them inward, and thereby in time develops the light within him, within her, which guides them on their path toward the journey within. So it's the alternate nostril breathing, and we'll use our little handy sound of the tambura and tabla to help keep us in a rhythmic pattern. A reminder that that pattern is breathing into the count of four, holding to the count of eight, and out to the count of four. We begin with the left nostril, hold out right, then in right, and then out left. It's alternately done. I'll help to remind us of that. And then the last sequence is in through both nostrils. Keep in mind that this side of the body corresponds to the Jamal aspect of divinity realized in humanity. That aspect is beauty, harmony. The right side is Jalal, often associated with the masculine principle, power, might, and strength. So you can see that by doing this practice, there is an attempt to balance both of those. At a physical level, it helps to balance the two hemispheres of the brain, the one that's in control of our motor skills, the one that's in control of our conceptual skills. So it's healthy at many levels. Remember, the object here is to turn the light inward. I think last month, but again, I'll say it here. When you're holding your breath, allow your eyes inwardly to turn upward as if they're looking at the center of your forehead, and the tip of your tongue can go to the roof of your mouth. If you feel there's a part just behind your teeth which has a more rigid, bony feel to it, just back from that, it's a little softer. The tongue goes there as if it's in the center of the palate. Tongue there, eyes go up during the holding of the breath, and you can release during the exhalation. Okay? It's a lot to think about. That's another little piece that perhaps I haven't introduced before, or if so, it was last month. Very slowly we learn these practices. So just start breathing in and out, and in and out, just to get the rhythm. In and out, in and out. Now hold off the right nostril and we'll begin. In left. Hold. Hold. Out right. In right. Hold. Out left, in left, hold, out right, in right, hold, out left, in left, hold, out right, in right, hold, out left, in left, old. Outright. In right. Hold. Out left. In left. Hold. Out right. In right. Hold. Out left. In both. Hold. Out both. 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 And just breathe within your own rhythm. Keep the vision and the awareness turned within. With each breath, let yourself feel a deeper awareness, a deeper penetration. If it helps, you might think of sitting in a beautiful natural setting or a beautiful temple, and the light is streaming in. You know, even when the eyes are closed, you get a sense of that brilliance and warmth. Let that feeling arise and penetrate your being. As we enter this time where our days are growing shorter and shorter, and we're about to approach that moment where it turns and the light returns, we can tune to this by allowing ourselves to go deeper and deeper, knowing that, as St. John of the Cross says, sometimes in the moments of greatest darkness, it is really as if we're in the greatest light. He likens it to the owl's eye being exposed to light, which is extremely painful. Think of those moments as being your illumination. Let the light be within. Let that light be your guiding force. And in these moments, if there's something deep within you, some question, some desire of the mind, a necessary desire of the mind that helps to illuminate the purpose of your life, place the question there within. Let the seed, like the acorn, that must be buried in the dark earth before it bursts forth and begin its journey upward to the light, Let that seed be planted within you. Plant the seed. It's a turning point within the earth, and with the solstice, watch it grow and flourish. Again, from Jalaluddin Rumi. There's a way of breathing that's a shame and a suffocation. And there's another way of breathing, a love breath that lets you open infinitely. Again, there is a way of breathing that's a shame and a suffocation. And there's another way of expiring, a love breath that lets you open infinitely. Highlight this aspect of planting a seed and it emerging, much in the manner of Hazrat Anayat Khan. He drew from a number of sources, and here in this class we often do as well. And I wanted to share from a text called 365 Tao and Their Daily Meditations. And this one is on emerging. And it's one of them that is given early on in the year. And since we won't be seeing each other until next year, some of us, I thought I would share this just as that point of concentration as we move towards the winter solstice, at least in the northern hemisphere, and then that emergence, re-emergence in the light. These teachings are always begun with a haiku followed by commentary. And the haiku is, thunder and rain at night. Growth comes with a shock. Expression and duration appear in the first moment. Things cannot remain in stillness forever. Winter storms may destroy some things, but they also prepare the way for life. That's also for us, you know, metaphorically. The storms of our life might destroy things, but they open the way for something else. If things are swept away, it is appropriate. There must be an opportunity for new living things to emerge and begin their own cycle. All growth comes with a shock. When a sprout breaks its casing and forces its way to the surface of the earth, it is the climax of a long and deep accumulation of life force. We may think that it came up suddenly, but in actuality, it emerged as the product of unseen and subtle cycles. When the seedling appears, it carries with it the complete pattern for its growth. When the seedling appears, it carries with it the complete pattern for its growth, perhaps even the making of an enormous tree. Although time and the right conditions are necessary, neither of these factors adds anything to the inherent nature of the seedling. Here's the nature-nurture argument, by the way. You know, are they that way because of their nature? Are they that way because nurtured that way? Okay, so not Murshid. They're all Murshids, by the way, but this Murshid, who happens to be from the Taoist tradition, says, although time and right conditions are necessary, neither of those factors adds anything to the inherent nature of the seedling. So anything that's happened in one's life that might have been disturbing or inharmonious or felt that it was infringing on your personal or human rights, doesn't matter. The seedling's the one and the same. Okay. It completely embodies its destiny. The seedling completely embodies its destiny. We completely embody our purpose of life. Are we illuminating our path? Are we illuminating our path? All these practices, that's what this is talking about. Began with the first question, what is the purpose of one's life? It completely embodies its destiny. Therefore, the growth and character of the plant and its very life are all present at the moment of emerging. And how profound that we too are like that. We are that seed or array. It's beautifully expressed as the sun is like God, and we are all rays that are still connected to that sun, coming from that divine source, which, as Murshid says, is trying to realize its own purpose through our being. How extraordinary is that? Although we might think it's all about us, guess what? It's not. Okay. It is and it isn't at the same time. These are paradoxes. Hazrat Inayat Khan's son, Pir Velayat, I'm talking about a lot about Pir Velayat today, but he would say that the path of spirituality is the path of reconciling those things that seem absolutely irreconcilable. Reconciling the irreconcilables.
We can't possibly add a bit to our a cubit to our stature, the Bible says.
It's true. Although we try with high heels and such. Which helps to have a little humor. It's the ego, of course. Okay. Again, concentrate on that seed, that kernel. What the practice Kasab can do for us is to, again, help us focus inwardly. We're so used to being externalized, thinking of these objects of sense as being doorways through which we receive information. But in spirituality, that process has the potential to be reversed, so that by a certain glance, we express compassion or love. It's a doorway, but the doorway is going outward. That through a touch, we express a kindness or comfort. Through the breath, we offer calm or healing. So once we learn that these doorways go both ways, we can use them to benefit in one way oneself, but others, the world. That's what it's all leading towards, really. One of my students is a veteran, and he spent a lot of time in the Middle East and also in the African continent. And we were looking at some of our final projects, and some of them were very extraordinary. I mean, the students, I have a great group of students. They think I'm just flattering them, but truly the amazing group this semester. And we were looking at, you know, the graphic design projects, but just the absolute exquisite simplicity and beauty of the use of color and line and order through the use of grid that isn't always apparent. And we were talking about that, and I said to them, I wonder if you have any idea how important it is to give yourself these images and these impressions, that this literally can change you, you know, by creating them and by observing them and studying them, that these things even can heal a trauma or, you know, an emotional break. Again, speaking of Pure Vilayat, he must be one of the beings that God invoked today. Some of you may or may not know this, but when he was a young man, he was engaged to a woman, and he liked motorcycles and cars, and they were on a motorcycle together before they were married, and it was crashed, and she died. Talk about needing to forgive oneself, not really being able to get over it. And he said what he did was, and he was very musically adept, obviously, his father was. Murshid Hidayat also, we know, played the violin. Pir Vilayat played the cello. But he listened to a piece of music, and in this moment, I don't recall what it is, but I'll find out for those that are interested. But it was classical music, a beautiful piece of music, an emotive piece of music, and he listened to it again and again and again for 6 weeks. And he said, after that, I was healed from that. So this is the power of that. And I was talking to the students. I wasn't giving them that very specific example, but I said listening to beautiful music, looking at beautiful things is very important to our developing a kind of character, a quality of character. And this man spoke up that's a veteran that spent time in very difficult places. And he said, they're building a hospital for the veterans that have been severely injured. And one of the key features is that all of the rooms look out on this amazing garden because they know how important it is for them to observe. You know, if they can, they can go out in it. But if they can't, they can at least see it. And it's like, well, there you have it. There you have it. I mean, he understood that and could see it from his field and what they're doing. So it's very beautiful. And Murshid talks about that in the volume that deals with healing in mind. And perhaps that's why it's important now to think about it, because we're talking about the mind ego. Okay. I'd like to close on quite another note, but it relates to the subject today. And this is a reading from the daughter of Hazrat Inayat Khan, Noor, or Noor Anisa Inayat Khan. And she wrote these tales called the Jataka Tales. And they were from the original teachings called the Jataka Mala, which were stories of a succession of Lord Buddha's lives, and she translated them into a language that could be understood by all, and also especially children. So it gave them a nice, beautiful way of learning spiritual principles without being very esoteric and heavy-handed. So this little story, and again, it has to do with the mental ego and some of the questions that we've talked about here. It's number 16, and it's called The Quarrelsome Quails. The Quarrelsome Quails. And it says, hark to those painful cries which pierce each day the silent forest. Alas, they are the cries of 6,000 quails. Poor little birds. Each day a man comes from the village and casts a net over them as they land on the ground. After throwing the net, he pulls it together, catching hundreds of quails, which he takes to the village to sell. Now one day, the king quail said, cry no more, my little ones. If you heed your king's words, you will never be caught. When the net is thrown over you, put your heads through the holes, and all together, not one by one, all together, lift the net through the air. You know, poke your head, and all together fly up, lifting the net through the air. And then land on the top of a thorny hill, and the prickles will hold the net above the ground, and you can escape underneath it before the villager can run after you and catch you. Do as I say, and you'll be saved. It's so practical. And here's the beauty of the king quail, which of course is the beauty of most spiritual masters, it usually is kind of a simple solution. And that's a beautiful, very elegant solution. But the story goes on, because we haven't gotten to those quarrelsome quails yet. So do as I say and you'll be saved. But if one day quarrels arise and you should begin to fight with one another, alas, that day you will be caught and you will never see the woods again. And he didn't say it here, but what's more is you'll end up as a plate of food. So the quails did as their king advised, and when the net was thrown over them, they flew up onto a hill, and with it, they dropped it, and they were able to run away and escape. And the villager returned each day without a penny. And his wife was very, very angry. Here's the cycle of existence, right? "Do not worry," he said one evening to his wife. "Those naughty quails will fight together one of these days, and then they will be easily caught." And it happened. One day, a quail stepped on the head of another. This again has to do with some of my questions through the class. I hope you're seeing the connection, okay? Questions for all of us, not just for, I mean, for me as well as any of us sitting in this room or anywhere else. So, and it happened. One day that quail stepped on the head of another. Astaghfirullah, right? "I will give you what deserve," cried the injured quail in anger. And jumping at the other and knocking his wing. Okay, no indifference there. No, let them do what they do. Let them say what they say. We're not going to react, right? So here now, it's like an accident. He stepped on his head. Now I'm going to step on your wing. I'm going to get even. "And away with you, and away with you," he cried, this stomping quail. King Quail, seeing the quarrel, said to the others, "Let us not stay here. These two unhappy birds will surely come to a bad end." Okay, also a good lesson, don't get in the mix. Don't get in the middle. Just walk away. Awesome. Just walk away, right? Good lesson for us. Don't try to fix it. Don't try to mend it. Just walk away. And he flew off with the birds who heeded his warning. And while these two quarrelsome quails went on fighting, a strange dark cloud came over their heads, and it was the net. But it was also the weight of their own karmic actions. Okay. Many others were caught with them and taken to the village to be killed. But the wise king and those who had heeded his counsel were never caught. And in the silent little forest, they all lived happily ever after.
Sweet.
It's good, great stories, aren't awesome. They beautiful? Okay. Well, I think that's it for this year. We'll meet again next year. And just a reminder that we do accept, I know so many of you have been so kind with donations both here and online, and you've responded so well to my call for support to keep things moving ahead in the coming year. Please continue to do that. Thank you for that. And we want to be sure to take an opportunity to dedicate whatever merit may have arisen in these moments together and thank all the holy ones that were here guiding us during this time. And we ask that waves of benefit flow out from this site, touching all those that are in need, that all may be free from suffering and free from injury. We can close with the prayer Khatun. O Thou, who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear Thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us Thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness, teach us thy loving forgiveness, raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide men, send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. Amen.